I want to go into Scott's case.
This is a case of a 67-year-old gentleman who felt a lump in his left breast. He had a needle biopsy that showed an invasive ductal carcinoma. He then had a left modified radical mastectomy and axillary node dissection, which showed a 1.5 centimeter invasive ductal carcinoma of the left breast, histologic grade 3, nuclear grade 2, intermediate grade DCIS, strongly ERPR positive 90%, HER2 negative by FISH. He had 30 axillary nodes examined, 6 were positive for metastatic cancer. 1 sentinel node contained a centimeter of metastatic tumor with no extranodal extension. I saw him at that point after he had had his mastectomy, and he had had a preoperative chest x-ray and a CT scan of the abdomen and pelvis, which showed no evidence of metastatic disease. I elected to perform a PET scan based on the fact that he had 6 positive nodes, and he was found to have a solitary hypermetabolic nodule on the left upper lobe measuring about 1.2 centimeters. He has family in Philadelphia, so we sent him to New York City, and he was seen by a thoracic surgeon who performed, and this was after extensive discussion with the chief of the breast service, and it was decided that the patient would undergo a video-assisted thoracoscopic surgery with a resection of this nodule, which he had done. He had a 24 by 22 by 15 millimeter adenocarcinoma bronchoalveolar carcinoma resected with involvement of his pleura.
Did you mention his smoking status?
He's a non-smoker. So after further discussion with him, he then underwent a dedicated thoracotomy with a left upper lobe lobectomy. There were 3 microscopic foci of residual adenobronchoalveolar carcinoma, and I had requested that the EGFR mutational analysis be performed, and in fact he has an exon 21 mutation in his bronchoalveolar carcinoma.
Okay, so we've got a man with node-positive breast cancer and EGFR mutation-positive non-smoking bronchoalveolar carcinoma. So obviously we have the issue of tyrosine kinase inhibitors in lung cancer and EGFR mutations, and obviously the issue of node-positive breast cancer. John?
Well, to begin with, it's a fascinating case, but I think there may be a possibility to kill 2 birds with 1 stone, hopefully, and that is he warrants adjuvant chemotherapy, assuming his other comorbidities are reasonable. For his breast cancer, he probably would warrant adjuvant chemotherapy for his resected lung cancer, although bronchoalveolar carcinomas were not eligible for the BR10 study. Nonetheless, you might be able to make that argument. You can pick drugs that are proven to be of some benefit in the adjuvant setting for lung, like carboplatinum Taxol, which would be a not unreasonable option for breast cancer as well. There's no reason to think that it wouldn't provide benefit. We have data, admittedly, with trastuzumab in combination that suggests that, but there are active regimens in the metastatic setting. And then you might want to reserve your tyrosine kinase inhibitor to the point where you've completed chemotherapy, radiation, and put him on hormonal therapy as well.
Which hormonal therapy?
Well, the bottom line is that men respond to aromatase inhibitors in the metastatic setting as well. And the biology of the disease is very similar to that in women, other than it happens to occur later, a higher rate of ER positivity, and tends to present as a higher stage. But generally, the treatment responses appear to be the same if you eyeball the series that are reported. Personally, I would put him on tamoxifen because there's much more data with tamoxifen in the setting than with AIs, but there are case reports and anecdotes of these patients responding in the metastatic setting to AIs, even if they are male.
If he didn't have lung cancer, what would you generally use for chemotherapy for this man?
Well, 67-year-old with very high-risk tumor, but ER positive, again, I'd be offering him aggressive chemotherapy, including anthracyclines and a taxane, and our bias is towards TAC.
Vicente, how would you think through this one?
I want to clarify about aromatase inhibitor. There's 0 data in the adjuvant setting of male breast cancer, and the data that there's in metastatic is quite limited. We had published a few patients. The best therapy for this man is tamoxifen, definitely, and we will use in this patient either TAC, or we will use more commonly weekly paclitaxel times 12 and FAC or AC times 4.
What about with the lung cancer now on board?
I will give them an optimal breast cancer regimen. He has early lung cancer, and do I have a problem adding carboplatin? I don't have a problem, but it does add toxicity. My approach will be to give them weekly paclitaxel followed by FAC, and definitely give them tamoxifen.
You know, actually, Scott, Peter Ravden is working on a model for lung, like what he's done in breast and colon. We don't have that quite right now. So what have you been thinking about in terms of specifically what you think you might want to do?
After conversations with him and his son, This man is terrified of breast cancer. We've talked initially about carboplatin, and then we got the EGFR mutation status back. And that's when I really started to think harder about, as Vicente pointed out, choosing a regimen that's going to optimally address risk of what's going to threaten this man's life. And in my heart, I'm concerned that breast cancer is going to threaten this man's life more than lung cancer, and that my therapy, in terms of trying to maximally reduce his risk, should be addressed more towards an aggressive breast cancer chemotherapy regimen rather than lung.
Which one?
Well, initially we had talked about dose-dense therapy, AC followed by T, versus the TAC regimen. I use more dose-dense therapy.
And you were thinking to follow it up with erlotinib?
Initially, I was just thinking to follow it up with tamoxifen and radiation, but now that he is positive, to discuss with him tamoxifen with erlotinib, with the understanding that that's never been shown to be safe or effective.
So I would just make a point here that I can understand putting the breast cancer risk up there. I agree with it. It's high-risk disease, arguably higher than the lung cancer, but it's the hormone therapy that's going to be his important step in that direction. So I think that we could still err in the direction of using a good lung cancer regimen, which would provide reasonable breast cancer chemotherapy, planning on good hormone therapy and the erlotinib. That's just a buy. So I actually agree with, I think, John's view on this. Now, I just want to make a separate point in this case, which is this case is interesting on many levels, but what got lost a little bit in the noise here is that this patient had a scan done that we wouldn't normally do, and it sounds at first blush like the scan was a reasonable thing to do. After all, it saved his life. But I want to point out to you that his breast cancer has nothing to do with what the scan found. And if you're going to argue that this man should have had a scan because of this improved outcome, you're essentially arguing that every 67-year-old man who walks into an internist's office needs a PET scan.
Well, he had 6 positive nodes.
Ah, that's my point precisely. Has nothing to do with his breast cancer. You found a curable lung cancer, and there's no guideline that says that blind scanning of patients who have apparently cured early-stage disease, normal liver function tests, no complaints, and a normal chest x-ray benefits anybody. And I don't want anybody to take away from this the message that it was validated. This was a true and unrelated. And what you're supporting with this test, with this case, is not scanning men with breast cancer, but scanning men.
You wouldn't do the scans in this patient?
No, we don't do the scans. If a patient has normal liver function tests and no complaints, we don't do it. I want to point out to you that across the last 15 years in the cooperative groups, we have progressively eliminated the eligibility testing, and the prognosis has progressively gotten better with less testing.
Interesting follow-up for that is that U.S. Oncology apparently is doing more. They have a number of places that are doing more of these. And Joyce O'Shaughnessy was saying that she has a number of these women who finds a mediastinal something and they're not eligible for the protocol. And then you have this clinical dilemma of saying, and the woman says, well, why aren't I eligible for the protocol? And you say, we think you have more advanced disease, but maybe it's not so bad. And it seems like those kind of discussions probably don't help the patient very much. You know, because you're going to say, but we're just going to forget the scan, not say you have that stage, can't put you on the protocol, but we're going to give you the same therapy anyway and tell you not to worry. And so that's kind of a downside, which would happen in a fair number of individuals, I think, if you start doing it.
Right. This is a remarkable case. But fundamentally, what this argues for is scanning men, not for scanning men with breast cancer.
Don't you think there are some high-risk patients who should be studied?
Well, it's not clear. And again, if you have normal liver function tests and no focal complaints and a normal chest x-ray, the probability that a blind scan will find anything in patients is below 5%.
Alan?
Well, we've been hearing about the differences between, you know, Canada and the United States in the use of off-label therapies. And we've been talking as if the United States, there's really no issue, that we can do whatever we want. But I don't know what everyone else's experience is here, but I'm often having to argue with insurance companies to get approvals for various drugs. And aren't we likely to be seeing more and more of this? And in fact, isn't it our obligation to try to develop the evidence so that we'll be able to support the use of these therapies? Rich?
Yeah, I wish you could comment a little bit further about the absence of guidelines for staging scans. I spend a lot of time trying to talk people out of those scans, frankly, because everybody has something. And if you look at the radiology guidelines, if they have a little nodule in their lung now, they're advocating 2 years of follow-up. And I don't know that there's any data to do that, but patients certainly come in requesting them.
Well, I'm not sure I understood you. There is not an absence of guidelines. There's a guideline not to do them.
Yeah, it's different. Yeah, evidence-based guidelines are no scans, right? Yeah.